Okay, so we are holding on Zion Omadez. Chess Omadez. No, out of Zion Omadez, three lines from the bottom. Okay, still talking on various topics relating to that. So Omalei Rav Yitzchak Rav Nachman. My time alay osi mar lebeik nishta. Rav Yitzchak asked Rav Nachman, why don't you come to the local shul? Let's all you to that. Why didn't the Rebbe Rav Nachman come lebeik nishta to the shul? Let's all you to that. Omalei lo yachilna. So Rav Nachman said, I can't. He was old, he was weak, whatever it is, or because he's too busy learning. So Rav Yitzchak tells him, okay, we can't see Lamar Asara, so fine, let's gather a minion together for you over here and your Bais Medrash over here, but let's see, and you'll daven with them. So Rav Yitzchak answers, Trichali Milsa, it's too much of a bother for me to have to wait until the minion assembles, or there's actually an explanation that the Smag says the other way around, I feel it would be too much of a tircha for other people to have to come over here and join me. Okay, so Rav Yitzchak says, fine. Okay, you have a reasonable reason not to daven with the minion then because of that. But the lay malay ma'al the shlucha b'tzibura, at least what you should do is tell the local chazan, the local shliach tzibur, the idna de matzri tzibura, that at the time when the tzibur is at that point of davening, at Shemana Esrei, lay tzibur lo yedi lamar, then they should send somebody to tell you, you know, right now the minion is up to Shemana Esrei and therefore now is the time to daven. Omalei, so Rav Nachman says, my kulahai, what's the big deal? If anyway I'm davening the yichidus, then why is it so important? Why are you making such a big deal of that they should send somebody to tell me to daven that it's exactly the time when the tzibur is davening? What's so great about that time? Rav Yitzchak tells him, da'om Rav Yechanan mishum Rav Shimon Yechoi, because you should know, Rav Yechanan said in the name of Rav Shimon Yechoi, my dichtiv v'anis v'ilosi l'cha Hashem eisrotin, what does the pasuk mean? And what does the pasuk mean? I, Hashem, my tefillah to you is at a time of goodwill. What is Esrothin? Meaning, in other words, implying that there's a certain time of goodwill. Amasai Esrothin. So he tells him, when is this Esrothin? When is this favorable time by Hashem? B'shashat Tzibur Mespalin. At the time when the Tzibur is davening. So therefore, he's telling Rav Nachman, even if you have reasonable reasons not to go to the minion or to have a minion brought to you or whatever, nevertheless, at least you should be trying to daven at the same time that they are, because that itself is an Esrof. There's a different girsa over here. Hagoy Sagra brings over here a girsa that the Rif and the Rosh have, that rather what the Gemara is saying is something different. That from Vanit Filosi, Lachashem Esrof, and we're learning that a person's tefillah is primarily listened to only in shul. And therefore, so that goes with the first thing, when he's telling him you should be coming to shul, you should be having a minion by you, because the davening with a minion is a very important thing.
What about the Chassidish stories about Shem Tov, the Alter Rebbe, they used to daven on their own?
Because, so what it...
Tzadikim granted, but...
Right. So what it is because they were davening ba'arichos, to an arichos that the other people were not going to... Nevertheless, actually, you mentioned in the Baal Shem Tov, there is the story where the Talmidim would wait around while he was davening, And one time they left, and then the Baal Shem Tov finished his davening quickly, and he explained that their being present over there helps raise up his tefillos, and if he's all by himself, then he can't. So yeah.
And
the Alter Rebbe, I don't know that we specifically find that he davened more by Rechus than a Chassidim. You find about the Rebbe Rashab that he did, that he davened very by Rechus. But so that on his own, because in other words, he'd start with the minion, and then he did continue on his own because he didn't keep up with them. But also, in other words, there's the idea that Hashem accepts the tefillah more at the time when the rabbim are davening. That's not to say, I mean, you know, especially a rebbe himself is an neshama klalit, so therefore, in a certain sense, he is a tzibur all by himself. But okay. Anyway, Rabbi Yitzchak is telling Rabbi Nachman, it's all fine and good, and you do have reasonable reasons to daven on your own. In fact, Rabbi Moshe has a couple of trubas about this, for example, where he says, you know, you see from these Gemaras, you are supposed to daven the tzibur. It is actually, even though the Gemara makes it sound like it's just a good idea, it really is a requirement. All it is the reason why the Gemara doesn't classify it as a chiyuv is because there are situations, for example, Rabbi Nachman is constantly learning, or for example, where he said it would be too much of a hardship because he's not feeling well or whatever to come to shul, so then you have exemptions. But yeah, okay. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, Oma Mehacha.
It's elective.
But that's the thing. So Rav Moshe writes in a couple of his truvas that it's not elective. It is actually required.
No.
Right. but it is actually recorded. No, apparently even in those times it was. With that, now that you mentioned a good point, because actually the Alter Rebbe talks about in a few places in Tanya, it's brought in other places, it's just that in those times the main avoda was learning Torah. Nowadays the more important form of avoda is tefillah, so therefore we have to be more careful about it. Right? Okay. Rav Yosef ben Chanina Amar Mehelcha. He said, Rav Yosef ben Chanina says, we have another pasuk that expresses the same idea, that there's a certain eis rotzen, and that eis rotzen is when tzibur is davening. Koyama Hashem be'eis rotzen ani sicha. Hashem says, at a time of rotzen, I have answered you. So again, we see that there's a certain eis rotzen, and that eis rotzen is when the tzibur is davening. Then ani sicha, because then ani sicha, I have answered you in the singular, you in the singular when, yes. Okay. Rav Acha ben Chanina Amar Mehelcha, he says, there's another pasuk. Hein kel kabir v'lo yimas. Behold Hashem Kabir, and he does not reject. The simple meaning of Kabir means powerful. But we're explaining that the word Kabir over here means many. So it means that Hashem does not reject the tefillah of the many. So even if, the Rambam explains, for example, it means even if the tzibur, it contains among them Rishoyim, even if most of them are Rishoyim, whatever, nevertheless, because they're a tzibur, because they're 10 people, therefore Hashem accepts their tefillah, as opposed to a yachid, it depends on his individual ma'asim. Marshall brings a slightly different gusa in the Gemara over here, that the Gemara combines together two psukim and Iyob, both of which have the word yimas. One is this pasuk, hein kel kabir v'lo yimas, and another one is hein kel lo yimas tom, that Hashem doesn't reject the perfect one, meaning, so you have, there's the individual, that Hashem doesn't reject his tefillah, when he's davening at the same time as kabir, as the tzibur. Okay.
Kabir means
many.
What's the origin?
The origin is it means many or large or whatever. You know, think of, you know, when the Arabs say Allahu Akbar, right? It means Hashem is great, Hashem is powerful, whatever. Okay. Uchtiv. The connection is a Kabir, Akbar, whatever. Okay. Uchtiv, and you have also the pasuk, Poder b'sholem nafshi mikrovli, Hashem redeems my soul in peace from the battles that were against me. Ki berabim hoyu imodi, because the many were with me, meaning that he davened together with the rabim. So there's another pasuk that we see that when the person is davening together with the rabim, or even like we're saying at the same time as the rabim, even if he can't be there physically, then Hashem accepts his tefillah.
Tadav
b'shalom nafshi, Hashem redeemed my soul in peace. Mikrov li, from the fights against me. Krov means wars. Ki berabim hoyu imodi. In a braita, it says the same thing. Rav Nosson says, how do we know that Hashem doesn't reject the tefillah of the rabbim? Where kabir again means many. And also, So we see from all these various spoken that davening together with the tzibur, or at least at the same time as the tzibur, is a very powerful thing, and therefore Rav Yitzchak is urging Rav Nachman to do that. Okay. Then we have, now, the question is, we explain the kibir rabim hoyu imodi. What is the first part of the pasuk? Poder b'shalom nafshi. I go with Abach, actually adds it. My poder b'shalom nafshi. What is the first part of the pasuk? Poder b'shalom nafshi. He redeemed my soul in peace. What does that refer to? Omer, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, means Hashem is saying, kol ha'osik b'torah v'gnos chasodim u'mispal l'matzibur, means the person is involved with learning Torah, and with Gemilas Chasadim, and he davens together with the Tzibur, so all those things that bring Shalom, because Torah brings Shalom to the world, B'chol Nisi V'Seh Shalom, Gemilas Chasadim, of course, brings Shalom between people, and he davens together with the Tzibur, Malani Olav, Hashem says, I consider it in his favor, Ki'ilu P'da'ani Li'u L'vanem Imen Umas Ha'olam, I consider it in his favor, as if he redeemed me and my children from among the nations of the world. So in other words, Poder b'shalom nafshi, it's not just the simple meaning of the pasuk, as David is speaking, but we're also understanding that Hashem is saying, Poder, this person who does this, b'shalom, who acts in ways of shalom, he redeemed nafshi. Hashem, so to speak, says, my soul, he redeemed from among the nations. Poder b'shalom nafshi, my Hashem's soul. Yeah. The ones in Hasidus, it talks about various. There's many Maimorim based on this. Of course, you have all the Maimorim Poder b'Shalom from Yudas Kislev and whatever, often quote this. One, it's in many places. There is in Hemshech Ayin Beis, but there's also in lots of other places. Yeah, among other things, it talks about what the connection is, what the deeper connection is between these three things, that they're all bringing down of course into this world. And therefore, because it causes, we're doing a more powerful avodah sabirurim, and therefore that brings, of course, it redeems, of course, out of the golos that it's currently. Amar Reish Lakish, Kol Mi Sheyesh LeBeis HaKnesses Be'Iro, a person who has a shul in his town, Ve'Ein Nichnas Sham Le'Yisrael, he doesn't go into that shul to daven, Nikra Shochein Ra, he's called a bad neighbor. Shenem, I was supposed to say, Kol Yamar Hashem HaKol Shechena HaRoim, so says Hashem, regarding all my bad neighbors, Hanoigim Banachla, who touch, meaning who harm the Nachla, the inheritance, Hashem Inchalti Es Ami Es Yisrael, which I've bequeathed to my people Yisrael. So the simple meaning of the pasuk is talking about out Yisrael and talking about the hostile nations around it. But the Gemara is understanding that also the shul, which is where the Shechina is Hashem's Nachla, so to speak, Hashem's heritage in this world nowadays. And therefore, a person who's a bad neighbor and touches that and affects that by not coming to the shul, and it means, for example, there may not be a minyan without him, it may mean that other people are going to learn from him not to come to shul or whatever. So it's called a Shochen Ra. Not only that, a person who acts that way causes golos for himself and his children. She never hinini knows from my Allah Muslim, because the end of that pasuk says that Hashem says to these bad neighbors that I will uproot them from their land, and I will uproot the house of Yehuda from among them. So we see, in other words, the person
took
Israel. The simple meaning of the pasuk is talking about Eretz Yisrael, but Marsha explains in connection with this and also the next piece of Gemara. We know the famous thing, the Gemara says in Megillah, that when Mashiach comes, all the shuls and Batei Medrash outside Eretz Yisrael are going to be moved to Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, in a certain sense now, they're like extraterritorial parts of Eretz Yisrael, even now. And therefore, in other words, the person who is a shochen, therefore this person who doesn't come to shul, is being called, and it's referring not just to the actual territorial land of Eretz Yisrael, but also to all the extraterritorial parts of Eretz Yisrael that are all over the world, namely the shuls. In this connection, they told Rabbi Yechanan, you should know there are old people in Bavel, and not just old people, Mepharshim say, what we mean is even people who are as old as you. Rabbi Yechanan lived to a very old age.
Right.
There's even places where it says that he lived as much as 300 years, although we're not sure is that real or is that a guzmo or whatever, but he lived a very, very long life. He definitely lived to at least 110. So they told him there are people like that in Babel. Toma v'omer, Rabbi Yechon was surprised about that. He said, the pasuk says, L'man yubu yumeichem yimei b'neichem al ha'adom ha'ksiv. The pasuk says, in order that your days and the days of your children will be long on the land, av b'chutz la'aretz lo, it sounds like that bracha doesn't apply in chutz la'aretz. How comes it that these people are living to such old ages in chutz la'aretz? Jews we're talking about, obviously. But they told him, you know what, these people, they come early in the morning, and they to shachris, the shul, and machashki, and they stay late after dark in shul. But I will lebeknishta to the shul. Omar, he says, oh, hainu da'ahani lahu. Then that's why that bracha is effective for them. So again, Marshall says it goes with the same thing. Since those are extraterritorial parts of Eretz Yisrael, therefore the bracha of Aman Yubu Yimechem Yimechem Al Ha'adoma applies to them as well.
But they're saying it's coming.
No, they're saying they come early in the morning and they leave late at night. So in other words, they spend as much as time, but these people we're talking about, they spend as much as possible of their time in the shul davening and learning. So therefore there's a chatari chasyam. To the Amr Rabbi Shur ben Levi Libnei, as in fact we find that Rabbi Shur ben Levi gave similar advice to his children, Kadimu v'chashichu v'ayru l'beiknishta, make sure to go early in the morning and leave late at night and then going to shul, k'yeh d'toruchu chaye, in order that you'll live long. Same idea. With the bracha, and Rabbi Shur ben Levi lives in Eretz Yisrael, mind you, but he's talking about, even to his children, he's saying the place where you're going to have arichas yomim is when you spend a lot of time in shul, and that also shows. I mean, it shows that you're using the time that Hashem gave you effectively, so therefore Hashem gives you more of it. So nowadays, okay, so a person comes to shul in the morning and they leave late at night, a person has to go and make a living, fine, but a person, where a person's thoughts are, that's where he is. Even when he's at work, he would rather be in shul davening or learning than in a certain sense, he is there, that's it. Also, we're talking about older people. Over here, older people, they're not having to work for a living anymore, so they are able to spend more time in shul davening and learning. Yeah, for example, you have the kollel they have here in the middle of the day, for example. They have a kollel here from 11 to 1 during on weekdays, yeah. All right. My cross, Rav Acha Bar Chanina says, what the pasuk that expresses that idea, that being in shul a lot lengthens a person's life? The pasuk says, Ashrei Adam Shemeali, a pasuk in Mishlei, happy is the person who listens to me, it's so to speak, the Torah personified talking in those sukkim. Lishko dal basoisa yom yom, to be diligent at being at my doors every day. Lishmer mezuzas tzachai, to guard the doorposts of my entrances. The word lishmer, besides meaning to guard, also means to wait. So it also means that the person waits and spends extra time in shul. And the next pasuk continues, ki motzi masachaim, the one who finds me has found life. So we see that being in shul is associated with hadrichus yamin. Okay, amar of chista. In this connection, another thing we learn from this pasuk. Since it says dalsoi sai and psochai in the plural, my doors and my openings, la olam yikonis adam shnei psochim the beisak nesis. A person should always go into two doors in the shul. They must have named shnei psochim. What do you mean two doors? And what if the shul only has one door? Ela ema shiur shnei psochim. What Rav Chista means to say is the shiur of two doors. We'll explain what that means in a second. V'achakos yispalo, and only then should he be davening as usual in the Gemara, primarily means to an answer. So what do we mean by this? There's a lot of explanations. Rashi over here explains that it means that shiur means a distance in a certain number of tfachim or amos or whatever. Actually, no. Rashi over here rather explains that what it means is the person should not sit right next to the door, because if he sits right next to the door, then it shows like he just wants to get in and out as fast as possible. It shows like being in shul is a burden. So you should go in at least the distance of two psachim, which most of the mafoshim say that it means eight tfachim, because according to them a Pesach is four tfachim and twice that is eight. There are in Agoy Sabach over here on the side, it brings a Tosfos, which we don't have by us, but he brings, I guess, from another manuscript or whatever, that says actually eight amos. So that's one explanation, as it means a distance in space is a distance of eight tefachim or eight amos. A person can walk into the shul and only then daven. And the post can say on that. Now, that doesn't apply. If his regular makom kavua is near the door, fine, then that's allowed, because then it shows that he's obviously not making a burden. That's just his regular place. But if a person is just coming into shul ad hoc, then yeah. Another explanation they talk about, another explanation that Rishonim bring, is the toast that's mentioned in the Bach brings it, among others, that It means in time. A person shouldn't. He enters the shul and right away he starts davening. He should give it a certain time, the time it takes to wait eight, to walk eight tefachim or eight amos or whatever, in order, first of all, in order to settle his mind, this way he could daven with a clearer mind. And also, it also shows that it's not just a burden, it's not just he comes in and rattles off davening and leaves. Right. And then there's another explanation also. Rabbeinu Yonah brings another explanation, that the idea is you don't want him to sit too close to the door so he doesn't get distracted by people coming in and out. So all those various reasons, and all those various reasons are brought in halacha, and therefore all of them apply. There are also mafoshim who say literally what it means is a shul should have an entryway, a foyer, so that you literally, if possible, it should obviously, not all shuls are able to be built that way, but if possible, a shul should be built, but there are two sets of doors going into it. Our shul, for example, is like that. Many other shuls are like that, where you have a foyer, you have a vestibule or whatever. What it adds is, first of all, it means that necessarily, therefore, the person is going to be walking that distance before they daven, so that way they are definitely fulfilling this idea of a certain amount of space and a certain amount of time. Also, there's the idea that it shows, like, if there's no foyer or whatever, then so to speak, like, the person is saying, I can't go all the way into Hashem, I have to stand outside and then depend on the malachim or whatever to bring my tefillah to Hashem, as opposed to when he goes through an outer way and then into an inner way, then he's showing that I'm ready to come in front of Hashem personally, so to speak, and speak to him. Okay. Continuing, the Gemara says,
So
you should really do all those things brought in Shulchan Aruch. You should see to it that you're walking at least a certain distance. The shul itself should have a foyer, if at all possible. A foyer like an entryway, like we have over here. You have the front doors, and then you have the front doors, and then you You have the front doors, and you walk a couple of feet, and then you come to the inner doors. So if at all possible, a shul should have that. In addition, or whether it does or not, you should have that you're walking in a certain space, four tefachim or eight tefachim or eight amos, according to the various opinions. But that doesn't matter when you're leaving it. That Shir Shnei Tzachim is 8 Tzachim. Don't just sit next to the door because it looks like it's a burden. So if you have a fixed place next to the door, then fine. Yesh Mefoshim, that which is the Rabbeinu Yonah, because you're going to be looking outside and you're not going to concentrate. So if it's not open to the street, then it doesn't matter. And then Yesh Mefoshim, then it means you shouldn't be in a hurry to daven right away. Wait the time for 2 Tzachim. And Lachim Lachos Shechol Perushim, it's good to be choshish for all of them. It says Yonah. Okay. Since we're talking about ki moitzi mosachayim, so the Gemara brings another discussion having to do with the word moitzi. You have a pasuk in Tehillim that goes al zois ispalo kol chosid elecha la'eis mitzoy. Regarding this, a chosid will daven to you at a time of mitzoy, at a time of finding. At a time when he needs to find something, they should be able to find it. So what does that mean? There are a lot of different explanations. First of all, Amar Rav Chanina, La'eis mitzoy zu isha. The time of finding means when he's ready to get married. That he should daven, that he should find his right basherta, the right wife for him. Shenema, we find the word mosa in connection with a wife. Mosa isha mosa to. For a man who finds a wife has found good. So the Gemara mentions in this connection, he found another wife. The Ma'arava in the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, Kinosiv Inish Itza, when a man and when a Chassan and Kala would get married, Amri Lehochi, people would tell him the expression Mosa or Moitze, famous expression. Is it Mosa or is it Moitze? Mosa, the Chiv Mosa Isha Mosa Tov, by Yofik Rotten Hashem, and when he received the favor from Hashem. Moitze, the Chiv Moitze, and Imami Mosa, the Isha of Gomer, I find a woman bitter, more bitter than death. So they're asking him, like, what is it? Is it a good Shidduch or not? One explanation is that they're not asking him actually, is your wife good or bad, among other things, would be problems with Lashon Hara. It means that they're telling him what mentality are you taking into the marriage? Are you taking into that the mentality that you're going to have a good marriage or not? They actually say one explanation, and it is Motza is past tense, Moitze is present tense. So if the person is Motza, I feel I've found the right one, I'm not second guessing myself, then he'll have a good marriage. But if it's Moitze, if he's always second-guessing, did I really marry the right person? Should I marry somebody better or whatever? Then it's going to be a very difficult marriage. They say also a vote on it. The word Isha is a few less than the gematria of Ish, whereas the word Ha-Isha is the same gematria. So if it's a marriage where it's clear kind of what the chain of command is, and then I'm right. You know, husband has to respect his wife, but on the other hand, the wife has to realize that, you know, the husband is the one who makes, you know, at least the Gemara actually says above Matthias that at least when it comes to Mili Dishmaya, when it comes to Ruchniistic things, the husband has to be the one in charge because he's more familiar with them. So therefore, if it's a marriage where there's an Isha, then it will go well. But if it's her Isha, if she thinks that if the thought is that in everything she and he are equal, then it's not going to be so good, because then there's going to be things where they're not going to see eye to eye on matters of Ruchnius. I mean, there's a lot of different explanations.
It's just in Ruchnius?
So the Gemara mentions there in Bava Metzia a couple of possibilities. One is that it's Ruchnius versus Gashmius. One is that it's in worldly affairs versus household affairs, whatever. In other words, there are things in which the husband should defer to his wife because she has more experience in these things and whatever. And then there are things where the wife has to defer to that. For example, things around the house. Those are the kind of things. Okay, so bossing is one thing. So it depends what we're talking about. Okay.
So you deal with that.
I mean, each marriage and each family has their own dynamics. They need to work out what works for them and what works up the Torah and what works in. Okay. Onward. Rav Nosson says a second explanation. La'eis mitzoy zu Torah. The thing what we said, that the chosid should daven to Hashem la'eis mitzoy, that means when he's learning Torah, that he should be able to learn Torah properly. And we see the word moitze in connection with Torah. Shnei ki moitze matachayim. The Gemara possibly quoted before. The one who finds me finds life. So a person should be davening to Hashem that his learning should be successful. Rav Nachman Yitzchak la'eis mitzoy zu mitzvah. Rav Nachman Yitzchak says it refers to death. A person should daven that when it comes time for him to die, that it should be an easy death without too much trouble. Shenema la'mavis toitzoy. It says we find the word moser toitza actually in connection with death. La'mavis toitzoy. There are many exits to death. Tanya namihachi. In fact, we learn similarly in a brayza. Shamei osu shloshim mina misin nivru ba'olam. There are 903 kinds of death that were created in the world. Shenem alamavis toitzois, and the word toitzois for gematria hachi havu. The gematria of the word toitzois is 903. So that's the number of different ways there are to die. Kosha shibakolam askara. the gematria hochi habu, that is the gematria, kosher shibakolon astra, the harshest and most difficult of all those kinds of death is astra. The Gemara mentions astra in a lot of places. Rashi translates it here and in those various other places by a French word that means diphtheria. Diphtheria is where the person's throat closes up and they can't breathe properly, and the word Rashi uses is related to the word strangle in English. So the person kind of strangles from the inside out. That's a very, very, very Rashi's word is estranglement. Yeah, that's the old French word for diphtheria. So that's the harshest of all of them. And we find in many places in Gemara. In fact, the Gemara says that on the Anshe Maimon, for example, used to fast from Monday through Thursday every week. Not every week, whatever, the week when they were on duty, the Anshe Maimon, the week they were on duty, they would fast Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Each day, their fast was to ask Hashem for a different thing. On Wednesday, it was that children in particular shouldn't get Askara. The children particularly are very prone to it. And so they would daven specifically. They reserved one day during their week to daven about that. Nicha shebekula nishika. The easiest of all the 903 kind of deaths is a misef nishika, where Hashem, so to speak, kisses the person and takes away their neshama. But the Malach HaMavis is not even involved. Askara damya kichizra begvava de amra, the lachur, askara damya, askara, to compare how difficult it is, how hard it is for the neshama to be ripped out of the body like that, kichizra begvava de amra, it's like when you have thorns that are stuck in a ball of wool, de lachure nishra, where you take out the thorns and throw them behind you, and pull them out, inevitably some of the wool comes out with them. So the same way, in other words, that kind of death is a very painful and difficult thing to pull the neshama out of the body. The ikka da'amri kipituri b'fi vesht. Another version is, to explain how hard it is, it's like pulling out the pituri from the vesht. Rashi explains, pituri means ropes, and a vesht means a round hole, which is light, it's shaped like a vesht, like the vesht is the esophagus, so it's called vesht because it's shaped like that. Rashi describes over here an interesting thing. There are places in the ocean where you can't go with boats that have iron in them, like iron nails. The Rashash says maybe what it is in those places, like the local magnetism is very strong, and therefore it'll pull out the nails or something. So what do they do if they have boats that if they want to sail in such places? They put the boats together by taking ropes and jamming them very tightly into holes that are drilled into the planks of the ship. They sew the ship together with ropes, basically. And the rope obviously has to fit very, very tightly in the hole. To pull it out takes a lot of effort. So the same way, that's a comparison to the death of Askara, which is a very painful thing of ripping the neshama out of the body. On the other hand, neshika, the mitzvah neshika, damya k'nishcha b'nista mechelba. It's like pulling out a hair from a glass of milk. It goes very easily. The same way, for a mitzvah neshika, the neshama leaves the body very easily. Benissa means a hair, mechelba from milk. So that's very easy. And one idea is, talked about in Sfarim, the idea is that by a person who's not on such a high level, their neshama is, we're talking about their nefesh alakit after all, but it's entangled with their body, kind of, and therefore it's very hard to pull it loose, as opposed to a tzaddik, he refined his body, he made his body into a lavush for alakus, and therefore his neshama can divest it very easily. And then go to where it belongs, Hashem. Okay, so far we have three explanations of what La'is Mitzoy means. It means getting married, it means learning Torah, and it means death. Rabbi Yechanan Amar La'is Mitzoy Zukvura. Rabbi Yechanan says the pasuk La'is Mitzoy, a person should be davening Hashem, La'is Mitzoy, means when he gets buried. That, in other words, there is a mitzvah to bury a person after all, but unfortunately not everybody is zoich with it. So a person should be davening that even after he passes away, that his burial should go easy, and that they should have the schos for a proper burial and whatever. So where do we see matzah in connection with burial? Amar Rav Chanina, Maikra, where is a pasuk where we see that the word matzah is associated with burial. The pasuk says, Asmechim Elei Gil, the people who are happy about the appropriate things to be happy about, Yosisu Ki Yimsu Kover, they're happy when they find the grave. Now, the simple meaning of the pasuk is Iyav is talking about people who have nothing left to live for and they're happy to die, but the point is we see that the word matzah is in connection with the grave. Amar Rav Barav Shila, Hainu Da Amri Inchi. This is like the expression that people say, Liboy Inish.
So in a way, it's connected to the wife, in a way, it's connected to the grave.
No, so we're saying the Shurish Matzah is connected individually to each of these things.
Matzah, Isha,
Matzah. Matzah is the right. So in each one, you have it. So Omar Rava Barav Shila, Hainu Dami, see, this is like the expression. People say, Liboy Inish Rachmi, a person should always be davening for Rachmanis from Hashem, Afilu Ad Zibula Basrai to Shlomo, that even until the last shovel full of dirt that they have to put on his caver, that he should be at peace. In other words, a person shouldn't just say, well, okay, I'm dying anyway, I don't care what happens. A person should always be davening that even after he dies, even until they finally finish his funeral, his burial, that everything should go easy with him, that everything should be at peace with him. Okay. Mazutra amala is mitsoy the beta kise. Mazutra says a fifth one, the la is mitsoy, the passage we quoted before, refers to the beta kise. A person should daven to Hashem that he should be able to live in a place where he's able to have a beta kise, a bathroom nearby. Now, why is that such an important thing? Rashi explains, because we're talking about in Babel, Mazutra lived in Babel, but in Babel, because it's low-lying, the ground there is very swampy. So in many places, you can't dig pits or whatever for latrines. So you'd have to go out into the field, they'll go very far away, and it's dangerous, as the Gemara mentioned, in various places to hold it in. So a person should daven that he should be in a place where it's easy to do it. So they would. They would have to dig trenches in the ground and go. But if you lived in a place where the ground is swampy, then you would have to go far away. So Mazutra is saying you should be davening on it. Amri b'mar rava, they said in Eretz Yisrael, hodem Mazutra adjifam mikulu. Mazutra's explanation is the best out of all the five explanations of what it means by Yisrael, and Marashar explains, because only according to that one does the end of the pasuk fit. The end of the pasuk, if I'm to fit the lamed beis of Tillim, finishes off. Rach l'shetet maim rabin, elav lo yagiu, a person should be davening that the rush, that the flood of many waters shouldn't reach him. So therefore, it has to do with going to the bathroom, that the person should be davening, that he's able to go to the bathroom and not have to end up wetting himself. So therefore, so they said, with the other four explanations, how do you explain what does it have to do with a flood of water? But with this, it fits. Okay. Fine. Getting back to topics involving davening and learning, Amalei Rava L'Rachman Bar Papa, Lema L'Marme Hani Milyam Malsa, to Rava Asher L'Rachman Bar Papa, please tell us some of the great things, some of the nice teachings, the Amrit Meshmei de Rav Chisda, that you previously said in the name of Rav Chisda, the Mili de Beit Knishta, in things regarding shuls. You've previously told us some nice vertlachs in Rav Chisda about shuls, so tell us some of them. Tell us one of them. Amalei, so Rachman Bar Papa says, Hochi Amr Rav Chisda. And by the way, this is Rachman Bar Papa, but Pashkus is not the son of the Rav Papa. You know, the regular Rav Papa. That was the regular Rav Papa is actually a Talmud of Rava. So here, Rava is asking Rachman Bar Papa to tell him something over in the name of Rav Chisda, but Pashkus's father was a different Rav Papa. Which means, and there was Lav Davka when we say at the end of Siyum, when we mention the 10 sons of Rav Papa, some of the Mephoshim say, some of the Rishonim and Gaonim and Rishonim and Achonim, Lav Davka, they're all the sons of the famous Rav Papa. They're all called by Papa, because all of them had a father named Papa, but they're not necessarily the sons of the same. Because so why we mention all of them, so the Marshal mentions that there's a remez in them to the Aseret HaDibros and to the 10 sayings that Hashem made the world, but there's different other explanations, but whatever, they weren't necessarily all the sons of the same Papa. Okay. Anyway, so Rachman Bar Papa says, Amalei, Hochi Amar Rav Chisda said as follows, Ma'idichtiv Oyev Hashem Sharei Tzion Mikol Mishkanet Yaakov. What does it mean? The pasuk says Hashem loves the gates of Tzion more than all the dwellings of Yaakov. Why should the gates be more important than the dwellings? Oyev Hashem Sha'orim HaMetzuyonim Ba'alacha means Hashem loves the gates. In those times, gates are very often where they sat and learned Torah and taught Torah. The gates that are distinguished in halacha, tzion meloshen mitzuyonim, in halacha, yosim ibatik nesias and ibatim medrashis, even more than the shuls and the batim medrash. Meaning, in other words, you have shuls where they daven, you have batim medrash where they learn, but not necessarily things that bring to practical halacha. Places where they learn practical halacha, the ins and outs, what should you do, what shouldn't you do, Hashem loves those more. So therefore, Mishkan is actually important. So when we're learning Gemara, for example, talk about the practical halacha that comes out of it as well. Yeah. So when they're learning in the Batik Nisir, the Batik Midrashis, they may be learning Tanakh, they may be learning Mishnah, other things like that you can't derive practical halacha from. Hashem appreciates more the places where they're learning in such a way that you bring the practical halacha.
Why don't you put that in the front of your...
Okay, that's a good point. V'hainu d'omer Rav Chiya Ba'ami Ola. This is similar to what Rav Chiya Ba'ami says in the name of Ola. Miyoyim shechara Beit Mikdash, ever since the Beit Mikdash was destroyed, Ein lo la'akadosh baruch hu bo'olam ha'yela arba amas shel halacha bo'van. Hashem has in his world, so to speak, only the four amas where halacha is being learned. In other words, right, there is talked about many places in the Siddur. where the idea is, again, we talk about at the end of Nida, for example, that halacha is Tog of Kisra Shel Torah. It's the crown of Torah because it represents Hashem's actual Rasein as expressed in this world. And therefore, that's the place that Hashem appreciates most of all, when His Rasein is being studied, and we're learning how to follow Hashem's Rasein and how to stay away from things that are against Hashem's Rasein. The Rambam, by the way, has a long discussion about this has a long explanation about this in his Akdama to Pirush and Mishnah. It's pointed at the end of the volume over here before his Pirush, where he explains basically that Hashem created the world. There's all kinds of different species in the world, and each of them has its place, and each of them has its purpose. But what's the ultimate purpose? So then Hashem created man, where a human being doesn't have one particular thing. A person can do a lot of different things, unlike most animals only have one thing that they specialize in. Ultimately, what's the purpose? So that a person should use all of those abilities and all those talents and everything to serve Hashem. And that's accomplished by learning halacha, when a person knows what to do and what not to do. And therefore, in a certain sense, like, that's all Hashem has in the world. Like, everything else in the world is only worth it only for the sake of the person who's learning halacha.
So then, if that's the case, why does Rambam have to split the amount of learning into three different things?
Because even though it's true, actually, that I'm right. Once a person has mastered Gemara, which is analyzing and being able to derive halachas, fine, then mostly he should focus on that. But Rambam says once in a while he should be reviewing Mikra and Mishnah in order not to forget them.
It's
at the beginning, you have one third of each. But then I'm right, that's only until a person has mastered Gemara. After that, he focuses on Gemara and occasionally learns Mikra and Mishnah in order not to forget them. Because after all, you can't learn Gemara, you can't be analyzing unless you know what you're analyzing. Right. Okay.
So once he knows,
then he should be mainly right.
Technically, that's what we should do.
In principle, but actually Tosfos talks about over there that Gemara itself includes Tanakh and includes Mishnah, and therefore learning Gemara itself, Yoyotze, the threefold thing. But also, you know, we need to learn Chassidus because, as Gemara says in Shabbos, learning Torah without Yiras Shavayim, which is what Chassidus brings a person to, is like storing away grain without salt as a preservative, where eventually it's going to rot. Yeah. Okay.
But we shouldn't be learning Chassidus with in mind to learn Allah for the Shem Shalayim.
That's right. Right. Yeah. Okay. In this connection, the Gemara says, the Amar Abaya may reish originally have a garisna begaybe. So originally I used to learn at home, umatzlinim bevei kanishta, and then I would daven, I would go to shul and daven over there. Once I heard this statement of Rav Chiya Ba'ami in the name of Ula, miyem shacharav beis hamikdash, that ever since the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, that Hashem has in His world only the four Amos where Halacha is learned, so that I realized the place of learning is a very important thing. From then on, I would daven only in the place where I learned. So Garisna means to learn. So for Pashtas, it means you would go to shul and learn there and then daven there. But maybe he did the other way around. Maybe he did like Rav Nachman, who learned at home and davened at home as well. Rav Ami and Rav Asi, the Gemara tells about Rav Ami and Rav Asi, two of the great Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael. Even though in Tveria, which is where they lived, there were 13 shuls, and they could have gone to daven in any of them. They would daven only between the pillars of the Beis Medrash, which is the same place where they would sit to learn. So the same idea, in other words, they would sit, they would learn, and they would daven in the same place, because the same place where they learn is very precious Pasha. Garsin and right, the same journalist, exactly. Now, there is a bit of discussion about the ins and outs of this in halacha, because, among other things, first of all, does that apply to everybody, or does it apply only to people like Abaya and Rav Ami and Rav Asi, or Teirot and Umnasan? They're learning Torah constantly, and therefore, if they were to go from one place to another between davening and learning, then it would distract them from their learning. So that's one possibility. Also, the Rosh says, even if you're going to accept that, not like that, first, also there's the question, does this that we're saying to daven where a person is learning, does it override the chiyuv to daven with a minyan? Again, maybe only for somebody to say nothing, not necessarily for the rest of us. And the Rosh says anyway, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, even if we grant that it's not just for Teirotin and nothing, even if we grant that it's for lower level Tumat Chachamim, and still, a person shouldn't make a habit all the time of davening outside the shul, because other people are going to learn from him that you don't need to come to shul, and soon the whole minyan will fall apart. The better a person should still be going and davening in shul. Then Rav Chiya Ba'ami says another thing in the name of Ula, since we mentioned one thing of him, of course, as the Gemara often does, we're mentioning another one. Godol hanenem yigia yosim yirei shemayim. A person who enjoys the work of his hands is greater than a yorei shemayim. How could that be? Hold on. The ilu gaba yorei shemayim ksiv ashrei ish yorei Hashem. When it comes to a yorei shemayim, it says happy is the person who fears Hashem. The ilu gaba neni yigia ksiv, a person who enjoys the fruits of his own labor. It says yigia kakecha kisarchol, when you eat the work from the work of your hands, ashrecha v'toy vloch. It uses a double expression. You are happy and it is good for you. Ashrecha ba'olam azeh v'toy vloch ba'olam abah. The ilu gaba yorei shemayim v'toy vloch like Sydney. Whereas by the yorei shemayim, it doesn't say toy vloch. So we see that Nenemi Via is greater. So what's going on over here? So first of all, there are Mephoshim who explain that both of them are Yirei Shemayim. Marsha, for example, says over here. But obviously, we're not talking about somebody who's Nenemi Via Kafei, and he doesn't fear Hashem. We're talking about that both of them fear Hashem, but one of them is Nenemi Via Kafei, he works for a living, and the other one is basically, Marsha explains, the other one basically is living off the Tzchusim that he has. He wants to use this chosim that he's storing up because of his Yirei Shemayim, because of his mitzvahs and whatever, and that Hashem will provide for him that way. So fine, it can be a level of bitachon, but on the other hand, it means that he's losing what's being stored up for him in Olam Haba. So therefore, the nanim yigia kafei in that sense is better off.
So are we referring here to those who say that learning Torah without working is preferable, and here...
So according to Marsha, what we're saying is, in other words, there can be a person who has a high level of bitachon in Hashem, and therefore he can expect that Hashem will provide for him without actually having to work. There have been such people in history. However, the fact is, you should realize, on the other hand, he's living off the capital that should be stored up for him in Olam Haba. So therefore, maybe it would be a better idea if he was Nanim Yigia Kafa. But I mean, there's many different kinds of Yigia Kafa. Also, most of us, it involves working for a living. For some people, it involves a higher level of learning Torah or Davshir. Yeah, but no, there are those rare people where they work only Beruchnius and Hashem provides for them the Gashmi. But for example, there's a story that Al-Sheikh HaKadosh tells about a simple yid that he heard a shir, he heard a drasha from the local rav about bitachon, and he took it at face value. You have to have bitachon, so therefore, what do I need to work hard for a living for? Hashem will provide for you. One second. The upshot is, he sits all day at home saying tefillin. He's a simple person, that's all he knows how to do. The upshot is that sure enough, Hashem sends him a treasure in an unexpected way.
That's unique to him.
Okay, that's the point. So we're not saying, right.
But when it comes to Klal.
So that's what we're not saying about the Klal. We're not saying about the Klal. The Klal is an enemy of Yitzhak. Right. Yeah, indeed. Okay.
So
you have those rare Yechidis Gula. But again, even according to what Marsha is saying, even those Yechidis Gula should realize, on the other hand, is that really a person has to realize for themselves and consult with their Rebbe, their Mashpia, whatever. Am I doing the proper avodah? You know, there's a story the Friedrich Rebbe tells about Meshomai Tatoyu. About there were two people, a rich guy and a wagon driver. To make a long story short, there was, it happened one Erev Shabbos, they were both in the same town. There was a situation involving a wagon stuck in mud where the wagon driver could have easily fixed it, but instead the rich person went and tried to help, and he only made things worse. Meanwhile, there were poor people in town who needed an invitation for Shabbos, and the rich guy could have easily brought them all to his hotel and fed them all. Instead, the wagon driver invited them all, and they barely had enough to eat. They were neshamas atoyos. Each one mistakenly took the other one's avodah. So a person has to realize for themselves, and a person has to figure out what his proper avodah is, and not, you know, spend his whole life working on an avodah that's inappropriate for him. Anyway, there's a lot of other explanations on it. Also, another interesting explanation, the Shalach HaKadosh says, is you can have a person, let's say, when there's a shiloh of something on kashrus. You can have, he's going to say, okay, I'm going to be Yorei Hashem, I'm going to be Machmer, I'm just not going to eat it. And then you have the Nanami Yigia Kafa, where he works from the Horoviz over the relevant Sugyas and the relevant Shachs and Tazes and whatever to see, is it in fact Mutter? And then he ends up enjoying it. So therefore, in a way, he's better off because he has it by Olam Hazeh and by Olam Hazeh. And then the flat brings an explanation. He says a gleich virtual. He says that I used to say when I was younger. He says, I don't remember if I came up with it myself or I heard it from somebody else. What it means is a person who's nana from Yigia Kafov versus a person who's nana from Yiras Shemayim. You have a person similar to what you were just saying. You have a person who takes the view, I'm a Yiras Shemayim. Everybody should be supporting me because of that. So then that's not such a good thing, whereas if he's nana from Yigia Kafov, then he's much better off. The flat says that's only a gleich virtual. That's not the real meaning of it. But okay, anyway.
Doesn't Ramon say that there's no higher level than working and learning Torah?
But again, it depends what kind of working we're talking about. For some people, you have those rare people where the kind of work that Hashem wants them to do. Ultimately, work.
Yes.
So ultimately, working is a keli. Ultimately, is you trust in Hashem to give you, and therefore, what you're doing, the keli that you're making, has to be appropriate. So for most people, the appropriate keli involves working at a 9-to-5 job or whatever, an 8-to-6 job or whatever. For some people, for some rare people, it's different.
And came off in terror.
Yes, but even the Rambam, who's very much against the Chachamim taking money for learning, nevertheless, he agrees that there are those yichidus gula with there's always a thing. Okay, so Amar Rabbi Chiya Amim Shmei De'ula, Olam Yoder Adam Mamakam Dabe. A person should always live in the same place where his Rebbe does. And we see an example in history. She calls man Shimi Ben Gera Kayim, as long as Shimi Ben Gera, who was Shloima's Rebbe, was alive, like not the Shloima as Bas Pari. Shloima didn't marry Bas Pari because in Melachim it tells how Shimi Ben Gera was executed, and right after that, the very next process after that, it says Shloima married Bas Pari. So in other words, if his Rebbe, Shimi, as long as his Rebbe, Shimi, was alive, Shloima wouldn't have done such a thing. Which, okay, fine, maybe they were okay to pray, we talked about it before, but never was Shimi Ben Gera. This is the same Shimi Ben Gera who cursed David and whatever, but he was also Shloima Amalek's Rebbe.
Right.
He taught him Torah.
Because,
it's a good question, but nevertheless, that's how it was. Because Shimi Ben Gera was a great Talmud Chacham. And he did ask David Mechila after all, but whatever. Anyway, in the end, he was executed, but then right after that, it says Shloima Amalek. Shimon Gera, but right after that, it's a long story, whatever, it's not right now. But anyway, the point is that then only after that did Shlomo marry Bakhtar. So a person needs to live near his Rebbe in order that his Rebbe keeps him on the straight and narrow. Okay, so the question is, Altana Al Yoder, we learn in another bright that a person shouldn't live near his Rebbe. The answer is, like Kasha, Hodja Kayifle, Hodja Kayifle. It depends. If the Talmud is subjugated to his Rebbe, that when his Rebbe tells him off, you're doing wrong, he'll listen. Then you should live near him, because then he'll tell you what you're doing wrong and make sure that you're doing right. But if you're anyway not kokof to him, if anyway you're not going to listen to him, then better don't live near him. As Rashi says, better you should be a shogig rather than amazing. Like this, you won't know whether what you're doing is right or wrong. But if you live there and he's telling you you're doing wrong and you say, I don't care, I'm doing it anyway, then you're even worse off. Okay.
And observing the action.
That action that someone's talking about is a very great thing, yeah. But if he's going to be chutz v'dek, then it's yeah. Amar of Munna Bayehuda, Amar of Nacham, Amar of Abi. My dichtiv v'ozvei Hashem yichlu. What does the pasuk mean when it says those who abandon Hashem will disappear? What does it mean to abandon Hashem? Zahamaniach sefer Torah v'yotzei. That refers to a person who leaves the sefer Torah when it's opened, Hagos Habach adds, and he leaves. So he leaves in the middle of Kriyas HaTorah. On the other hand, the Gemara says Rabba Bohu nafik ben gavra l'gavra. So Rabba Bohu, if he needed to leave shul, he would leave only between aliyot. Because then the Sefer Torah is covered, it's closed up, and it's covered, so then it's not a bazillion to the Sefer Torah. And this is brought lahalacha and Shulchan Aruch. You're not allowed to leave the shul in the middle of an aliyah, in the middle of Kriyas HaTorah, only between aliyahs. Boy, Rakapa ben Pesukah l'Pesukah now. Rakapa asks, what about would you be allowed to leave between one Pesuk and the next? In those times, of course, you know, they have the Targum between one Pesuk and the next. So like this, you have the Balkore or the Aliyah or whatever, or the Oila rather, the Balkore or the Oila is reading a Pesuk. Then another person who's standing over there is reading Targum Onkel, is saying Targum Onkel, it's Balpeh. And then, so can you leave while they're saying Targum Onkel? We're not sure. Rav Sheshet Mahadir Afei V'Goris. Rav Sheshet, when they were learning the Torah in Shul, he would turn his face in a different direction, V'Goris, and he would learn Mishnah or Gemara or whatever while they were reading from the Torah. Omar, because he says, it's not a problem. Anan Bididan V'Inhu Bididhu. They are dealing with their thing. We are dealing with our thing. And if they have, they're listening to the Torah, I'm doing my learning. Now, how is that possible? So you have at least you have a bunch of different explanations. Tosfos discusses over here a couple of possibilities. One is that you're allowed to do it quietly, whereas there's a different Gemara in Sota that says that when they're learning, everybody has to be quiet, so you're not allowed to learn loud. So Rav Sheshet would learn quietly during this time. And then why is he turning in a different direction is because so he can learn, so he can concentrate better. Then Tosfos brings... One second. Tosfos also brings from the Rif. First of all, this only applies if there's another minion over there. If there's no minion, if he is part of the minion, if there's no 10 people without him, then you're not allowed to. Because then you need to have 10 people listening to Kriyas HaTorah. Also, the Rif says another answer. Rav Sheshet is, again, Torah Seyobnos. He's constantly learning Torah. That is his occupation. Therefore, he's Mozart. For the rest of us, it would be awesome. And then there's different other explanations. There's different other Rishonim talk about that Rav Sheshet had started learning beforehand. He was facing in a different direction because previously he was already sitting and learning. Now the Sibur is up to Kriyat HaTorah. Fine, he doesn't have to stop his learning, but if he would start in the middle, then that would be different. And yet another answer is that Rav Sheshet was blind. He anyway can't learn Torah Shebichtav. You have to learn from something that's written, and he couldn't read it. He's learning Torah Shebaalpeh anyway, so therefore he... When he was younger, he learned Torah Shebaalpeh. Torah Shebaalpeh, in those times, was still oral, so he could learn that Baalpeh. Maybe he himself had learned, and he himself is repeating to himself. So the point is, so only the Heker would be for somebody like him, who anyway can't look inside the Torah, as opposed to... It wouldn't, so then that's according to one explanation of why Rav Sheshet was allowed to do that. And the Maaseh in Shulchan Aruch says you really shouldn't do that unless Torosi and Nasei, and there's a minion without you, and whatever. But they talk about in Shulchan Aruch, are you allowed to do Shnai Mikra Bechem Taugum, which is the next subject in the Gemara over here? Are you allowed to do that during Kriya? There's a little more of a heter for it, because after all, it's the same parasha. Okay. Amar of Munna by Yehuda, Amar of Ami. La'olam yashlim odam parshiyot zivim atzibur Shnai Mikra Bechem Taugum. A person should always complete his parashiyas every week, together with the tzibur, learning shnayim mikra ve'echad targum. So each, they have different minhagim. The arm minhag is, there are poskim who say that you do each parasha, tzuchur, stuma, twice, and then the targum on that whole section once. And then there's different other poskim, and this is arm minhag, that we do each pasuk twice, and then the targum after it once. So you should always do that. So then in that case, in Shulchan Aruch it talks about that one possible, first Shulchan Aruch says you shouldn't be using any other translation other than Targum, because only Targum Unkelos is accurate and is given by the, and goes back to the Nevi'im and goes back to Moshe of Sinai. As other translations, I think the Gemara says in Megillah that the basis of it at least is good. But anyway, the point is, so you don't use any other translation, but in Shulchan Aruch it talks about that you can use Rashi instead. Because Rashi, if people can understand, then, yeah. So a person should always learn Shnai Mikra Vechatav. One idea of why Shnai Mikra Vechatav.
So you learn it during the week,
in principle, yeah. But one second. Vafilu Atoreis V'Divayin. Even the Pasuk Atoreis V'Divayin. What's special about the Pasuk Atoreis V'Divayin and the Pasuk in Parashat Matos? Rashi explains there's no Targum on it. There's no Targum on it. In other words, that the Targum of the words, Atoreis V'Divayin, and the whole list of cities that it said over there, the Targum is Atoreis V'Divayin, etc. The Tosfos says, if that's what the Gemara means, then in that case, it could have used another example. It could have used, for example, this upcoming week's Parsha, as a part of Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. That also doesn't have any Targum. Why does the Gemara say that? So Tosfos says that what it is like this. The stamp Targum Unkelos doesn't have a Targum, doesn't have an actual Targum of the part of Atoreis V'Divayin. What?
Targum
Unkelos does not have on that Pasuk Atoreis V'Divayin. In Targum Unkelos, the translation is just the same word as in Hebrew. However, there is something called Targum Yerushalmi, which you can find printed in the Koros Kedar, the Chumashim, which is a different, more expanded Targum, which does have a translation on it. So therefore, Tosfa says, what the Gemara is saying over here is that even though you would think that maybe Targum Unkelos is more important, Targum Yerushalmi, you know, who knows who wrote it. Nevertheless, in this case, you should be doing the third time with some Targum. You don't have Targum Unkelos, fine, do Targum Yerushalmi. In fact, in many printed Chumashim nowadays, most printed Chumashim nowadays, you will find the Targum that is on that Pasuk in Targum Unkelos is actually taken from Targum Yerushalmi. And instead of translating the words, just Atoreis translated as Atoreis, Divin translated as Divin, it actually translates them using Aramaic phrases. So according to what Tosfos is saying over here, it seems that translation actually originally comes from Targum Yerushalmi and then was put into Targum Unkelos.
So actually, Targum Unkelos comes from Yerushalmi.
So really, in other words, Targum Unkelos is the real Targum. That particular pasuk they took, they interpolated one pasuk, they interpolated the types to one pasuk from Targum Yerushalmi because Targum Unkelos didn't have an actual page for it. In Targum Unkelos, the translation was the Satoris to give it.
Other than that, then yeah.
So that's the point. When you get to that pasuk, then you're using the Targum Yerushalmi choice for that. Okay, again, there's different other explanations, including that one explanation is that Atoreis V'Divayin, the plaque says, those are names of cities that were named by Goyim. There's no reason to think that there's any, with one thing, Reuven and Shimon, fine, they were named by the Emoris with Ruach HaKodesh. But the people who named Atoreis V'Divayin and so forth, they didn't name them with any Ruach HaKodesh. You would think the Targum of them is not so important. No, it's still important. Okay.
We have it today?
Yeah. And then we do have these cities, and also
the
Targum. Again, if you look at a standard printed Chumash, you'll find the Targum on this Pasuk, Atoreis V'Divayin, is Machuelto, Malbeshto, that actually comes from Targum Yerushalmi and was inserted into Targum Unkelos.
Just the Targum on one Pasuk?
Yeah, just the, yeah. Okay. Other than that, you do Tavu Machos. It's much different. Shekola Mashlim Parsha Yosef Im Atzibu, because a person who completes his Parshiyos, who does Shnai Mikra Vecha Targum, together with Atzibu, Ma'arichin Lo Yomim Moshnoitav, his days and his years will be prolonged. So when are you supposed to do it? Rabbi Bevi Barabai, as we said the other day, the Shalos, that's really supposed to be Bevi. Rabbi Barabai, Sovel Ashluminul Parshiyosa, Shekola Shata Mala Yemenikipuri, the Mala Yemenikipuri. He thought, he was busy learning the whole time, so he thought to finish Shnai Mikra Vecha Targum of the whole year on Erev Yom Kippur. On the side of it, he brings it to Girsa, not the whole year, not the Kula Shasa, he brings from the Oroch of Girsa to Kala. There's the month of Kala, the month of Adar and Elul, when they have the Yafi Kala in the Yeshiva, so he's very busy over there. He had each of those Shabbos, each of those months, there are four or five Shabbos in, so he figured he'll miss the Shnai Mikra Vecha Targum then, and he'll make it up on Erev Yom Kippur. Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, and particularly, he figured to do it Erev Yom Kippur, because they have extra schos in Yom Kippur. However, Tonalei Chia Barav, Chia Barav from Difti taught him a braisa, like this. The pasuk says about Yom Kippur, you should afflict your souls, meaning you should fast on the ninth of the month in the evening. So what do you mean the ninth? You don't fast on the ninth of the month. You fast on the tenth in Kippur. Fine, but it begins by night, but the night is already part of the tenth. Elo loy malach, what it comes to teach you is, anybody who eats and drinks on the ninth, the pasuk counts it as if he had the schus of fasting on the ninth and the tenth. So in other words, eating on Erev Yom Kippur is a very important thing. It's a very important part of the mitzvah of Yom Kippur. So therefore, don't be spending time on Erev Yom Kippur doing Shnai Mikra Vecha Targum. You're supposed to be eating that day. So now Rabbi Barabaya thought, okay, so let me do them earlier. I'll do them all on one Shabbos or two Shabbos in some other time during the year, instead of doing them each week in its proper time. So a certain old Talmud Chacham tells him, no, we learn in a Brayse, maybe in the Yoanavi, maybe not. No, it has to be that he shouldn't be earlier and he shouldn't be later. Now, what's considered earlier and later? So Tosfos brings over here that from Mincha of the previous Shabbos, for example, earlier today, we daven Mincha, we lay in the beginning of Parashas Shmos, technically, therefore, at that point, it's already considered Im HaTzibur. Therefore, from then on, it's a valid time to do Shnai Mikra Vecha Targum for the following week.
From Mincha
of the previous Shabbos. Really, and you should finish it, Tosfos also brings from a Gemara elsewhere, that you should finish it before the Shabbos meal.
At night?
The pashtos, I guess the pashtos, it means the meal at night, but yeah. Anyway, in practice, what we have is, when it comes to chitas, we do, since we were saying before, that the post can say that Rashi can count instead of Targum, especially for us who aren't so familiar with Aramaic, so as far as chitas, we do every day. Sunday we do Rishon, Monday we do Sheni, and in that sense, we're doing a certain degree of Shnai Mikra Vecha Targum. Well, it's not Targum, it still counts in a certain sense. As far as the actual Shnai Mikra Vecha Targum, it's brought that Alpi Kabbalah, it's best to do it on Friday, and therefore it's best to do it on Friday after Chatzos, and therefore that's the preferable time to do it. If you're in, you're allowed to do it any time during the week.
That's for the Gemara.
Yeah, but so if you do it on Friday, it's also in a Tzibur, it's also with the Tzibur, while the Tzibur is getting ready for that action. Okay. If you do it on Friday, Friday after Chatzos, so let's say, for example, this coming week, it's Parashat Shmos, so you do Shnai Mikra Vecha Targum Shmos on Friday after Chatzos. Actually, it brings an Ayom Yom, that Abayim had a minhag where they would start at Thursday night and do one or two Parashiyos, then on Friday they would start over from the beginning and do it, and then on Shabbos morning, because you have different opinions among the poskim and different opinions of the Kabbalah, when's the best time to do it, Thursday night, or Friday, or Shabbos morning, and therefore that Abayim would be yoyso all the different opinions. As we find, Rabbi Shur ben Levi said to his children, make sure to complete your parashiyas with the tzibur of Shnai Mikra Vecha Targum. Number two, v'hizaru, and while he was at it, he told him two other pieces of advice as well. V'hizaru v'viridin k'Rabbi Yehuda, be careful when you're shechting a bird to also cut the viridin. We learned about this in Cholin. The viridin are either arteries or veins or whatever that are in the neck, either the jugular veins or the carotid arteries, whatever the point is. With a bird, birds are often roasted whole. So if you don't cut them, Rabbi Yehuda says you actually have to cut them, so he's saying be careful like that, because if you don't cut them, then the blood stays inside them, and therefore when you roast the bird whole, then you have a problem of kashrus. So be careful to cut them, like Rabbi Yehuda says. And also, Dittnan, Rabbi Yehuda, I'm actually Yishchet is liberated. As we learn in Cholin, that Rabbi Yehuda says that with a bird, the Shchita is kosher only if you offer cup liberated. And also, Vihizor or Bezokhin. It doesn't apply to animals, because animals, anyway, you cut up before you roast them. You don't usually roast an animal whole. Also, Rabbi Shrevan Levi tells his children, be careful with an old Talmud Chacham who forgot his learning because of an oinus, for example, because he became sick. Let's say because he was sick or whatever, be careful. Rashi says, for example, that he had a hard time making a living and therefore he wasn't able to continue learning and therefore he forgot. Still, be careful with respect to him. Because at one time he did know Torah. Because like we say, luchos b'shivrei luchos menachas b'arim. Just like we say that both the whole luchos, the second luchos, and the first one, even though they were broken and the letters flew off them, they're both in the arim. So we see that even an old person like that who's like broken luchos, he still has to show him respect.
That could apply to Rabbi Yosef
as one example. Yeah. Okay. Amalahu Rava Livnei. More pieces of advice that Chachamim told their children, Rava says to his children, when you're cutting a piece of meat, don't cut it on top of your hand, put it on the table or put it on a cutting board. I guess in those days, it was a common thing. You put a piece of meat on your hand and you cut it. Why should you not? Some say the reason is because of danger, because he could cut his hand. Others say, even if you don't have a problem, fine, the person has steady hands, he's not gonna cut himself in a way that would be dangerous, but he might still cut himself a little bit, a little bit of blood is gonna get out and go on the food, and then it's gonna disgust people, and they're not gonna wanna eat it. So therefore, don't do that.
If that happens, the food is still kosher.
Technically, the food is kosher because human blood is not actually traced. You just rinse it off, but still, it would be ekeldik. It would still be disgusting. The yamis is a subin. Rashi says the people who are eating there would be disgusted by it, and they're not gonna like it. The second piece of advice Rava told his children: don't sit on the bed of an aramis. What does that mean? The Gemara is going to explain in a second. And number three, he tells them, don't walk behind the shul when the people are davening there, because we said the other day, and the Gemara is going to bring later on, that you're not supposed to do that. We didn't learn before. We learned about a person davening outside the shul. Here we're going to talk about passing by the shul. Okay. So what's the second piece of advice about Teshua Mitzvah? What does he mean by that? One version is, some say that what he meant is, don't go to bed without saying Krishna. If you don't say Krishna, then your bed, an arami is a goy, so then your bed is not a goy's bed, you're going to sleep without Krishna. So don't do that, he's telling them.
That applies to women?
The Vash doesn't apply to both men and women. I don't know. Women have to have a mitzvah. Well, you're right. I mean, Shema is mitzvah, set to Shazman Grom. Women aren't chayv in it, but as far as Krishna Shalom mitzvah, we said the other day it helps protect the person from mazikin.
It helps.
Are they obligated? It's a good question. I don't know. Anyway, so according to one version, Rava is telling them to be careful with Kriyash Mashallah Mitzvah. So you're not going to bed like a goy. In fact, there's an explanation, I don't remember now from whom I saw it, that says that the vote is that Shema is one of those things, was Elu Ne'emor and Mecholoshen. There's a number of filos which you can say in any language. One of them is Shema. However, we also say, like what I mentioned in Shabbos, the Malachim don't understand that Amish. And since we said the other day, one purpose of Kriyash Mashallah Mitzvah, Rashi at the beginning of the Sefer had said that there's a reason of the Aloha for Kriyash Mashallah Mitzvah, because in case you davened early, if you daven Ma'ariv early before Tzeis, then you have to say Shema later on, and you're yotze that with Kriyash Mashallah Mitzvah. But right, well, if you say Shema in any language, technically you're yotze, but that's not the point. The point is, if a person did daven in the proper time, and they're only saying Kriyash Mashallah Mitzvah not to be yotze the mitzvah, then they're doing it because of Mazikin. If the Malachim don't understand Aramaic, then saying it in Aramaic is not going to do you any good, so therefore you're telling them don't do that. Who's not the only one?
Who doesn't understand?
Okay, so that's one version of what Rava meant, is don't go to bed without Krishna. The Ikka Da'am is like Timsibu Giyota. Another version of what Rava meant is he's telling his children, don't marry a Giyota. An Aramis means a woman who at one time was an Aramis and now is a Jew. Now, there are places where Rashi and
Giyota... Giyota and Aramis are two different.
Well, Giyota means that formerly she was an Aramis and now she's a Jewish woman. But she was born an Aramis. She was born an Aramis. No, the same. No, another obviously Gyor can come from any nation, but in the local goyim at that time were Aramim, so therefore, yeah. Anyway, there's one possibility that Rashi and Tosfos discuss at a few places in Shas, where the Rava was a Koyim. Now he's a Kohen. His children are also Kohenim. They're not allowed to marry a Geirus anyway. So in that case, all he's doing is he's reminding them, be aware, keep in mind, you're Kohenim, you're not allowed to marry a Geirus. If we say that Rover is not a Kohen, then his children are allowed to marry a Geirus, but nevertheless, he's giving them good advice not to. Now, it depends. Obviously, Rabbi Akiva points out, I mean, you have famous people in Jewish history. Yeshua married Rachel. Rabbi Akiva married Turnus. No, that's after they came to Yeshua. Yeshua. After he married Rachel. The famous, the woman over there from Yerusha. Rabbi Akiva married Turnus Rufus' wife after she was Misgaiah. But okay. No, that's neither here nor there. But anyway, Rabbi Akiva then says, obviously, when you have great Chachamim and whatever, you know, then that's different. But the average person, he said that Rava is advising his children, at least, that it's not necessarily such a good idea because she brings along with her a mentality from her old Goyish life. She may have even been previously married, and then that introduces additional complications and everything. Then there's a third version of what Rava means, that he means literally don't sit on the bed of an Aramean woman. And why is that? It was from Maisa to the Papa. Because you find a story that happened with her Papa in that connection. What happened? Did a Papa Ozel Agabi Aramis, your Papa went to visit a Goyish woman. Rav Nissim Goyen brings from the Goyenim that what happened was that her Papa previously had lent her this Goyish's husband money, and now it's time to pay up. So the Papa came to collect the debt. Or actually, the Papa had to come again and again because the guy is stalling on the debt. So one time, the guy wanted to get the Papa in trouble with a libel. So the Papa is going to this house with this Goyish woman, Hatsiolamita. She brings out from a bed, Amrullah Shave. She tells him, sit, and I'll go bring in the money. Amrullah, any Yoshevat Shakviya Samita. He says, I'm not going to sit down unless you pick up the bed, until you pick up the mattress first. Let me see what's underneath it. He'd be alone some bit, so she lifted it up. Well, Moshe Sham Tinek Mess. They found they were dead babies. Sort of Nissen explains on the side over here. They wanted to make a libel on him. They wanted to be able to falsely claim that he had sat on the bed and crushed the baby and get him in trouble, and then they'll be free of the debt. So the Papa was smarter than that, and he was able to find it out. Actually, Rashi and the Rashbam give the Gemara mentions this in Sochem as well, and Rashi and the Rashbam both give a different version that the Papa did not check ahead of time, and he did sit down there, and they did get him in trouble, and he wound up having to run away. Whatever the case, Rava is telling his children, therefore, according to this third version, literally don't sit on a goat's bed unless you check what's underneath there. Okay. Mikan Omr Chachamim. In the story involves the goat's border. Mikan Omr Chachamim, also Leisha Al Mitzvah Aramis, based on this, Chacham said you're not allowed to sit on an Aramis's bed. Okay.
So what happens to your physician?
Then you check to make sure. You check to make sure that they can't cause libels on you. Then Rava's third piece of advice was Val Tavra Chodebe Teknesis Veshasha Sibur Mispalin. Don't walk behind the shore. Now we're going to explain it. Don't walk behind the shore when the Sibur is davening. The Gemara says Messiah Rabbi Shurban Levi. This statement of Rava supports what Rabbi Shurban Levi says. The Amr Rabbi Shurban Levi also Lola Adam Shiavra Chodebe Teknesis Veshasha Sibur Mispalin. So Rava is confirming that. Okay. Amr Rabaya Voloyam Goran. Rabaya says there's actually details in that. This is only talking about El Deleka Pischa Achrina. Only if the shul does not have another door. But if the shul has another door, less one bug, and there's no problem, because people who see him walking by one door are going to say, okay, he intends to go in through the other door. They're not going to think like this. The reason why he shouldn't is because people are going to think, like he's crazy, he's trying to avoid the shul. But like this, if there's another door, okay, he's going in another direction. Also, this din only applies if there's no other shul in town. But if there's another shul in town, there's no problem, because he said he's planning to daven in this shul. He could very well be going to the other shul. Also, this only applies if he's not carrying a burden, if he's not carrying something. And he's not running. And he's not wearing tefillin. If he's carrying a burden, or he's running, then people realize he's not going into the shul, not because he disrespects the shul, but because he has something that he needs to bring from point A to point B, or because he's in a hurry to get to something, whatever. And if he's wearing tefillin, then obviously it shows that he has respect for Hashem, and he's keeping mitzvahs, so they're not going to think that he's avoiding the shul. So if you have any one of those three things, less one bother, there's no issue, and he's allowed to walk by the shul. Later on, the Gemara brings this also in the ninth parak, and it mentions another exception, which is if he's riding on an animal. Same thing. You don't expect him that he's gonna dismount and go into the shul, so then it's also allowed. Tanya, Omer Rav Akiva, since we mentioned one of Rava's pieces of advice is not to cut a piece of meat on top of your hand, so the Gemara mentions in this connection, Tanya, Omer Rav Akiva, Bishloisha Dvorim Oyhev Aneta Modiim. There are three things that I like about the people of Modai. Moda Media, it's called in English, nowadays it's part of Iran, but in those days it was a separate country or a separate part of a country or whatever. Rav Akiva says, the people of Modai have three good habits which I love. Number one, number one, when they cut meat, they only cut it on the table. Like we said, they don't cut it on their hand like they do in other places so that they don't cut themselves or dirty the meat or whatever. A different explanation also, some people say, some of Foshim say, as he means, every place else, if they have a big piece of meat, they bite off it, whereas in Moda, they cut it into small pieces, they cut it for steps. Number two, when they kiss each other, they only kiss on the back of the hand, which is a way of chashivos. Because otherwise, if you kiss on the mouth or whatever, then you have saliva, and it's disgusting, whatever, and when they have to discuss advice, when one person has to consult with somebody else, they only do it in the field. Amr of Adabaava Maikra, where's a pasuk about that third one that shows that that's a good idea? When Yaakov is getting ready to leave Laban's house, he sends for and he calls Rachel and Leah to the field together with the sheep, so he consulted with them in the field rather than in the house. Rashi brings the expression over here, of people say, of Naim Lakoito, the walls have ears. So therefore, you consult with each other in the house, you might have people eavesdropping or whatever. You do it out in the field, you can make sure to avoid eavesdroppers. Yeah, privacy. Tanya Omer Rav Gamliel, we learn in a braisa that Rav Gamliel also says similarly, there are three good habits that I love about the Parsiim, or the people of Persia. And snooing by chilos. And number one, they're sneeristic when it comes to eating. They eat in a refined way, as opposed to the modiim we said before, as opposed to, I guess, other goyim that live in that area. The Parsiim are tsanua, they're modest in their eating habits. So it means maybe, it could mean they eat a lot. They still could eat a lot. You have other Gemaras that mention that they eat and drink like a bear, but when they eat in a refined way. They're modest in the Beis HaKiseh. We're going to learn later on in the third parak and the last parak. We're going to talk about different halachas that apply and how a person should go to the bathroom. And they're also modest when it comes to tashmish. In fact, you have a Gemara in Ksubas that says that they would have tashmish while clothed. They would just uncover the relevant parts. The Gemara says, well, you're not supposed to do that. I'll be halacha. But you're not supposed to do that because the skin contact is an important thing. But nevertheless, this is the Parsiim would do that. So Rav Gamliel says, I like them for those three habits. One interesting thing, the point is, usually we say you're not supposed to go b'chukas ha-goyim, you're not supposed to follow in the ways of the goyim. But we see, when these are good habits, when they have good habits, then you're allowed to follow them and you're allowed to praise them and it's not a problem. However, on the other hand, as a counterpoint to that, Rav Gamliel just said good things about the Persians. On the other hand, we have something to the opposite. There's a pasuk in Yeshaya talking about the destruction of Babel. The expression of the pasuk is, Anitzi visilim kudashai, kibesilim kudashai. Hashem says, I have commanded my appointed ones. Mekudashai literally means my ones that I made holy. But it can also mean to appointed. No. No, it means the Persians, that Hashem appointed them as the ones who are going to be destroying Babel. So what's the word of Mekudashai? Tony Rabbi, why the word Mekudashai? They're not holy. Tony Rabbi Yosef, said Rabbi Yosef, Torah Braisa, Elo HaParsiim HaMekudashin was the one in the Gehenna. This refers to the Persians who are sanctified and designated for Gehenna. In other words, yes, right now Hashem is using them for a positive purpose, to destroy Babel, but ultimately they are, even though we just said they have three good habits as far as eating and the bathroom and tashmish, but nevertheless in many other ways they're very degenerate people, and the kind of people who belong in Gehenna, Rabbi Yosef is saying. Very appropriate with this past week's event. But the point is, in other words, Rabbi Yosef is saying, fine, very nice, they have the good habits that Rabbi Gamliel said, but nevertheless, let's not lose sight of the fact that fundamentally they're very corrupt and mushchasdik of people.
That's the Madain or the Parsi?
That's the Parsi I'm talking about, the Parsi.
As opposed to the Madain?
As of the Madain, he doesn't talk about, I don't know, maybe the Madain weren't as bad. I don't know. Yeah, maybe they're not. In that connection, we're stop over here, but it's worth telling in that connection of a story they tell about, you have other nations that at various times have been thought to be very refined and turned out to be somewhat less so. They tell a story, and they tell a story involving the Talmidim and the Yeshiva of Slobodka before the war.
Where's that?
It was someplace in Vodka. It's a suburb of Kovna in Lithuania. Anyway, there was a big statement. There were actually two big famous yeshivas over there. Anyway, there was one of the yeshivas over there where the Talmudim were somewhat more modern as far as dress and as far as behavior and whatever. This that we have nowadays, for example, but a lot of that in the Veltashi yeshivas, many of the Talmudim shave. That goes back to those yeshivas. Anyway, so the story goes that one of the Talmidim of that yeshiva had gone to study in the Beis Medrash in Berlin, and he came back telling about what it's like over there, what the Beis Medrash is like, and what the Goyish society is like. This would have been like in the 1920s or something. So, and the Talmudim over there got into a discussion, you know, how much should we be admiring the Germans? On the one hand, you know, they're very, you know, they do seem to be very polite and whatever people. On the other hand, you know, you have another group that's arguing, but what good is their politeness if it's not according to Torah? Yeah, in particular, one particular Talmud over there is very, 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 very pro-German as far as this. He says, look at this. He says, you know, I've been to Germany also. He says, you find over there even that, he says, if you ask a German for directions, that he'll give you the directions, and then he'll finish off, nicht wahr? Isn't it so? Like what, you know, you're asking him, and he has to confirm, but he's asking, like, he has to confirm with you whether the directions are correct. That's a very polite thing. We can learn a lot from such people. And again, they're having this whole discussion back and forth. Anyway, Kitzer, the story goes that many, many years later, like 50 years later or whatever, one of these Talmudim is now a Rosh Hashiva, and some Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. One day, a guy walks into the Beis Medrash, And he goes over to the Rosh Hashiva. I don't know if you remember me. I was one of the Talmidim 50 years ago. The Rosh Hashiva wants to give him Shalom Aleichem, and he sees the guy has a hook instead of a hand. That's what happened. He says, during the war, I was captured. I was in one or another concentration camp or whatever. And, in some of these camps, they were doing experiments, as you know, famously, like Mengele and other Yimach Shimonists, whatever, were doing experiments on the inmates. So I was one of them. He says, they're cutting off my hand. And as the Nazi doctor is cutting off, he's saying, so tell me, it hurts, nicht wahr? And I realized that that's the same nishvah that I was defending all those years ago. And it shows that you and your people on your side were right, that all their politeness and all their everything is worthless without it being guided by Torah.
Actually, behind the politeness lies cruelty.
Well, there's that also, right? But that's the point. In other words, right? That's the point. In other words, they can be very polite people, but overfart, you see. So that might be similar to what the Gemara is saying over here. Very nice. The piracy are very outwardly polite and everything, and Gamil can praise them for that. But let's not go overboard. Let's remember that, after all, they are Kodoshin and Muslim one and again.
Like we said in here, focus on judge by its
conduct. Yeah, there's that also, right? Yeah.